Welcome to another episode of the Power Up Podcast. And today we're talking about innovation. I got two great guests joining me from Burns & McDonald today. Jeff Danley, Director of Innovation from Burns & Mac, and Michael Bussinger, Assistant Department Manager at Burns & McDonald, and also our current co-chair for the Civil Committee of the SDSIC. Well, thanks a lot for joining me today, guys. One of the purposes of the Power Up Podcast is to introduce all the different members to each other via nice, easy-to-listen-to podcasts on your podcast player of choice. So why don't we start with Jeff? Well, I know a lot of folks know Michael, and Michael, you'll go second, but we'll get Jeff to kind of kick it off and maybe give us a bit of background on yourself, Jeff, and where you got started and your career and how you ended up with Burns & McDonald.
Yeah, sounds good. I appreciate the opportunity to join the podcast today. So my name is Jeff Danley. I am Director of Innovation here at Burns & McDonald. And I hate to disappoint people, but I'm not an engineer. I'm really not even a construction professional. I've spent my career at the forefront of technology. In the early 2000s, I was working at a big telecom company, and we had just introduced wireless data networks. So I really, in looking back, I did not have an appreciation for the level of innovation that I was starting my career in. You know, we had all of these handset manufacturers creating all these new devices with new capabilities, and we were advancing our communications network at an equal pace. And, you know, this intersection of what we could do by accessing data and the internet wirelessly from these devices was fantastic. So we did a lot of work with a lot of the entertainment services, even email. I distinctly remember testing email applications on consumer grade mobile phones. And, you know, the old crusty guys in the industry were like, nobody's ever going to check email on their phones. Why would you do that? That's a business thing. You know, and of course, today we all check email on our phones. And, you know, I heard similar comments when we started testing streaming audio and streaming video to mobile phones. And this was 2005, 2006, that time frame. You know, so it was before Android, before iOS. And, you know, those same old crusty guys were like, nobody's ever going to watch video on their phones. Don't waste your time. And it was only a few short months after that. I was leading a team of about 15 product developers, and our third party tech provider, we won an Emmy award for innovative use of broadcast technology. So that was pretty amazing. And of course, we all know today, you know, the proliferation of mobile video, and I don't know how many billions of hours kids spend on YouTube and TikTok on their phones, but it's needless to say that industry took a positive turn. So
awesome.
You know, And from there, I took some of my lessons learned there and I was active in the startup space and started a couple of companies and did a lot of work for some of those handset manufacturers, actually, that I had previously worked with. Okay. And then I got recruited over to a digital agency, and I established our innovation program that we sold into a lot of our Fortune 500 clients. And I would go in, it was kind of a chief innovation officer in a box type of a service, where I would help them identify their goals and objectives, look at industry trends, and then look at what's happening in the technology space. And if you think of that as a Venn diagram, they're in the middle of the overlap of those three. If you focus your innovation efforts there, you can almost always derive value. And I did that with a number of our big clients there, and had some contacts here at Burns & Mac that they talked to me and wanted me to come over here and set up a similar innovation program here at Burns & McDonald. So and here I am, and it's great. I've been here for a little over 2 years now, and you know what I'm seeing right now, it feels somewhat similar to the early days in my career when there was so much new technology and opportunity to embrace that technology to, you know, rethink the way we've done work in the past and you know, incorporate new sources of data and work more just more efficiently across the board. So I'm pretty excited what the next several years have in store for us.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I love that. So wait, who got to keep the Emmy Award?
You know what? That's on, I think it's on a trophy shelf somewhere in probably up in the Seattle area. So
yeah, there you go. So Jeff, are you in Kansas City too?
I am, yes.
Oh, okay. All right. At the big corporate office.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. We've got several thousand of us running around here on our Burns and McDonald campus here in Kansas City. So
yeah.
It's a great, great place to work. Great people. I was born and raised here in the Kansas City area, so I've just always stayed close here. So I've been pretty familiar with Burns and McDonald and, you know, through their activities in the community and, you know, certainly a lot of colleagues and friends who work here as well. So I was pretty excited to have the opportunity to join the team here.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, what a beautiful campus that is. It's amazing. We've been there a couple of visits, you know, as a vendor, customer, partner. It's, yeah, it's quite the facility. There's not too many that have a helicopter pad.
Right, right.
Yeah. All right,
have
Michael.
Our helicopter pad.
Yeah. Michael, so a lot of our SDSIC members know Michael. He's been a staple in communications within the SDSIC and definitely from Burns and McDonald, always bringing new ideas and participating as much as he can. So Michael, I know a lot of folks know you, but let's get you to introduce yourself as well.
Sure, give you a quick background. Started off in the substation industry about 13 years ago. As a red line drafter initially, moved up into a designer when I moved over here to Burns and McDonald. Focused on projects, always in substation, but sometimes around facility enhancement projects with the perimeter security, substation designs in the UK, down south and in Mexico and all across the country. So got to experience both on the physical side as well as the civil side. Been able to lead a few projects, and now I oversee a team that we've got about 28 individuals on staff on the civil structural side, as well as our geographic information systems group.
Wow. Yeah, awesome. And you're still committee co-chair, aren't you, for the SDSIC?
I'm still the co-chair of the civil structural committee. That's right.
There you go. All right. Awesome. Well, I appreciate you guys joining. Now, the fun part is we get to talk about some new cool things that Burns and McDonald is doing in the world of innovation. So I don't know who wants to go first, but Jeff, that sounds like that's your wheelhouse.
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, we put the innovation program in place when I joined just a couple years ago, and really our emphasis with this innovation program is to not really focus on one specific technology or another. And quite often innovation is not even about the technology. There's a lot of people change that goes into it. And, you know, your approach to generating new ideas and validating those ideas. And in a corporate environment, you know, it's really imperative to have your goals and objectives stated so that when you do start generating those ideas, you can bounce those up against your corporate goals and objectives to make sure that you're going to deliver value for the company. So a lot of our innovation program, a lot of our efforts to deploy that across the company has really been grounded in deploying a consistent approach to identifying our goals and objectives. Actually, we're using the objectives and key results methodology, our OKRs, so that we've got some alignment across the company. But, you know, having said that, once we kicked off that program, that was in 2002, mid 2002. Coincidentally, a few short months after that, this generative AI wave, technology wave, really kind of took over the world, it seems like. And I feel like that's really really got a lot of attention around here. We've certainly got several other we've got many other innovative efforts underway. We've got teams that are now looking at some new opportunities to file some patents and a few other technologies that we're looking at. But I think with AI, we've kind of zeroed in on that, at least for the near term, to look at how we might deploy that technology in different parts of our business, everywhere from in construction to finance to marketing. Our software developers are looking at some of the, AI first coding tools. So, I think there's just a lot of efficiencies that we can gain and delivering exceptional product for our clients as well. So, like I said, I try to avoid getting wrapped up and hyper-focused on a specific technology, but this is my perspective on AI and the impact of AI is it's on par with how the internet changed business in the late 90s and then how mobile devices changed business in the mid 2000s. And here we are in the 2020s, and AI will have that level of fundamental shift, and not just in our industry, but across industries.
Yeah, well said. I love the analogy, right? The whole, as soon as the internet hit, it was like, how the hell are we going to sell online? And how do we do it? How do we get e-commerce going? It was, that ramp up. Yeah, and then the mobile. I love your email. Why would you want to do email on your phone?
Nobody's ever going to do that.
Yeah. I've never seen anything accelerate as quick as all this AI discussion, right? It's just, people call it like the iPhone moment or whatever. I think it's bigger than that. It's been absolutely nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw another analogy where they were comparing, these different like fundamental shifts in technology. And they were talking about how the internet really gave us the data. It created, access to data all over the world. And then mobility obviously gave us remote access to that data. We could be anywhere. We could have it in our pockets. That's when we started seeing new experiences like, no one reads a map anymore. You are the blue dot in the middle of your screen, right? And the map literally rotates around you. And with AI, the analogy they made was that AI is now that's the compute power, right? So we've got access to the data from anywhere, and AI is going to help us create meaningful information out of a tremendous amount of data.
Ah, yeah. Love it. Yep. Well, and there's so much just misunderstanding of just AI in general. There's so many different types of AI and everything. And there's so much just miscommunication, right? You could spend 10 minutes on LinkedIn and just look at some of the posts. People think it can do everything. Others don't believe it. Other people think it's, fake. It's just all kinds of different stuff going on right now. It's an absolute jumble.
I'm glad that I'm not the only one that gets faced with all of those different perspectives. Cause I on a daily basis, I hear it all from AI's not real to, it's going to save the world and everything in between. So it's pretty wild.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. All right, man. So let's, Michael, you want to add anything there on the AI side?
Well, I think from my perspective, there's so many different tools. It's just understanding which ones are the most efficient for what it is we're working on, whether that be the substation side or foundations or site grading. All these programs seem to be incorporating it a bit as well.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we just went to Autodesk University, right, not too long ago, and it was lots of AI talk about generative design and generative AI, but also just adding it to some simple things like just CAD help, instead of searching through 8,000 documents to get help on a function, it's going to help you kind of context, right, as you're doing the designs. There's all kinds of stuff going on, and yeah, it's pretty hard to keep up.
Isn't that interesting though? The use case of just sorting through documents and kind of that self-help type service. You know, we think about AI doing all of these advanced calculations and like you just mentioned, generative design. And we had about 600 students in our intern class last summer, and I came up with this idea for an intern AI challenge, and we gave them all access to our enterprise chat GPT. So they really did not have to have any, you know, coding skills. They could go in and create custom GPTs, but I challenged them to go back into the business and find a problem that they could solve using AI, or at least the enterprise chat GPT flavor of
Awesome.
AI. And so many of them, there were several teams that their entry into this competition was just what you described. It was kind of a self-help or, you know, search and discovery of, you know, standards documents or, you know, internal databases of information. And, you know, there's it just it kind of grounded some of my thinking with, you know, there's certainly opportunity to really push the limits and do some amazing new things with AI, but there's also a very real, very tangible opportunity to just simplify some of the more mundane things that people have to do on a daily basis.
And it's such a, as you said, augment the things that we do as humans, right? But man, looking for data, you said it before, right? The amount of data that came in once we hooked up all our phones and everything, I can't seem to find anything decent doing Google searches anymore. It's just impossible. It's a bunch of ads and you know, different sites of non-experts, you know, but at least if you could sort through it quicker with a like a ChatGPT type of thing, it really helps.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just love asking it for some, you know, IEEE standard that's 187 pages and find the calculation and it spits it out of that document. That's helpful.
That's right. That's right.
Well, let's talk about something very interesting for all of you know, the large engineering firms like Burns & Mac. I know you guys do so many different things, but there's such a shift now with the introduction of AI just to the services industry itself.
Yeah, I think services and Michael probably definitely has a perspective on this. He's probably a little bit closer to it, but you know, from where I sit within our innovation office, you know, I think it creates an opportunity for us to, you know, tap into things like, you know, real-time monitoring and you know, tap into those just volumes of sensor and SCADA data to, you know, identify, you know, maybe it's grid imbalances or, you know, the line faults that might occur. You know, other things like predictive maintenance. You know, that's something that I think once we have some of that data around those you know, maintenance events, right? When we have to replace something or you know, if we can start capturing all of the information about that, what are we replacing? What are we replacing it with? How long had that thing been in service? And we start capturing all of that data to really get, you know, back to preventive maintenance and start anticipating what items are going to need to be replaced or upgraded, and you know, what's a substitute? You know, what should we replace it with? And then the last thing I'll throw out there, and then I'd love to hear Michael's thoughts on this, but you know, dynamic load balancing, right? And just looking at loads and using the data to anticipate new loads, right? New data centers coming online, or maybe it's crypto mining with this new administration coming in, being hyped up on crypto. You know, there's so many these new demands on the grid. They're not trivial. This is not urban sprawl. These are substantial consumption of power, and it's going to be fascinating to watch this over the next several years.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, you're right. Even the use of AI is driving up energy demand more.
That's right.
Pretty ironic. But yeah, it's I saw that there's a GitHub that National Labs put out, and it's They called it like Grid GPT, I think, but it's a GitHub that they put together. You could actually clone it and use it. But yeah, you're doing essentially, like you said, it doesn't have as much data, but it's a good example of just chatting with the grid instead of, searching for events or, having an idiot light that goes off when something's broke. You can actually write it like real-time demand. It's just a good example of what could be done. It's pretty impressive.
We had a really interesting conversation in the office. Actually, it's been over the past couple of days. It's been going nonstop. But a couple of days ago, Google announced their quantum computing chip, that Willow chip, and it's the conversation's been fascinating because. What does that do to demand for power for AI, right? If I mean, there's certainly power required for quantum computing and keeping it at 0 degrees Kelvin, right? And cooling this thing, but the processing power, we may not need to supply power to, racks and racks and racks of servers. So, it'd be really interesting to see how that plays out and if there's a significant shift in power demand when those chips become more widely available.
That's crazy, right? So, Michael, you want to touch on the services part of this, or?
Yeah, I don't know that I'm as in depth with it as I need to be yet, but I think you do make a good point. If we can, we'll have to probably find a secure way to do it, of course, with security around AI being an ongoing topic. But if we can upload the data to look at the systems all across, like the grid across the United States, and use it to help identify where the right position should be to implement new substations or switching stations or the data centers or whatever it may be. I know that the grid isn't where it needs to be in order to handle a lot of these demands with the electric vehicles and the electrification of everything else. And so if we can utilize AI to our benefit to help reduce the amount of time that it takes to identify these areas, I think that could be a good avenue.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And I think, Jeff, when you touched on quantum computers, it was like going to be my next question, where you see all of this going. I just, like the things you can do with the AI tools that we're getting, and the billions of dollars of investment from Google and Microsoft. And, I'm old enough to think I never would have saw the day when Microsoft would put out all this open source GitHub stuff. But yeah, they're releasing all of this great data and tools, AutoGen, all this framework and stuff. But then when you bring up quantum computers, when we can actually program using a quantum language and make it that much quicker, like that really starts to send off the bells and you think, what's going to come in the future? So you got any
Yeah, for sure.
futuristic predictions for us?
Oh boy, I honestly, I did not have quantum computing on my radar for this year or next year. So, but it is fascinating to think about, what we might be able to accomplish. But yeah, honestly, I've not really focused on that area just yet, but I do think, kind of dialing it back into what we're more familiar with right now, and that's AI. I think we're going to see, companies that have had a solid data strategy are certainly going to have a leg up on the competition. And we've heard people talk about big data for several years now, and that big data has powered dashboards and spreadsheets and things that many of us find uninteresting. I mean, certainly they're needed to run the business, right? But now that data, I look at data as rocket fuel for some of these AI platforms. And the more data that you can feed in, and the better quality that data is, the better quality your outputs are from some of these AI-driven systems. So, and I think we'll identify areas where we need more data. We'll have to create new sources of data. Whether that's sensors at substations, or maybe we're needing to, and this is already happening, but ingesting weather data to look at what's happening with the some of the transmission, and temperatures, and how much, what's the capacity going across different parts of the grid. So, pulling all this data in and making some sense of it, like I said earlier, get all of this data and create some meaningful information out of it, and use that information to, make the grid better, more reliable. I think there's a lot of really interesting new opportunities that may have not been opportunities in the past, but as we're able to process and consume some of this information in new ways, I think we'll find new ways to create value.
No, that's a great message, right? For pretty much all of our members. And you think, what can I do for, I mean, a lot of our members say they're not ready for AI. We don't have that expertise in-house and everything. Well, one thing you can do for sure to get ready is start cleaning up that data, right? Like, it's the misconception of, here's seven documents. Can you make me an AI that'll make new documents? No, it needs thousands of them to do the training, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I think for those members that are early in their AI journey, I think I've mentioned this at several conferences this year. You just have to start. You start small. Don't overcomplicate it. When you just mentioned documents, it took me back to a conversation I had with a member of our legal team. And this person has a stack of agreements, on his desk. That's, it's a foot tall, and he's got to get through all of these
Oh,
agreements.
God.
And wouldn't it be great if he could run those agreements through an AI engine? And we certainly don't want AI to make recommendations on our contracts or write legal language. That's something we are not entertaining that at this point. However, we can train an AI system to look for areas of concern in those documents. And, in terms of decreasing the amount of time spent on agreements that are just not ready to be reviewed, I think there's a tremendous opportunity there where we could kick back some of those agreements to the project manager and have them go back and work with the client to address some of the initial issues that the attorneys are going to have with those agreements. They could get some of that work done so that when they do actually sit down with the legal team, they have a much more productive meeting, and instead of spending 3 hours reviewing, a 50-page document, they're probably spending an hour, and most of the common issues have already been caught and been addressed by the project manager. So, I think that's a pretty simple, should be a fairly simple use case that hopefully resonates with a lot of members. We've all got agreements we have to get through, and quite often the legal department they're already overtaxed, right? So how can we help them get through some of their work more efficiently?
No, that's great. I mean, that's it. That's the sweet spot right now. That, like you said, just quick hits, right? It's not to try to replace people. It's not really trying to get it to write a legal contract for your customers. It's just to be able to help us in reviewing them. See, I still remember, my lawyer sitting down and like highlighting paragraphs, like handwriting marked up printouts, and like they give them back to me. I'm like, that's not helpful.
Right,
I still have to read all this. It's like, okay, I'm not a lawyer. Yeah, and we got the same, right, Michael, on like the contractual side, RFPs and everything for design and engineering. There's so much documentation to go through. It's like, can I just get help on that first?
It would be nice.
Yeah,
Yes,
just.
I think there's a lot of smaller tasks that could be kind of dealt with first. An implementation of some AI model there to help with efficiency. And I mean, ultimately, I think it really is an opportunity to give a lot of what I would say would be like career growth potential for people. I think a lot of people are scared of it, but if you just embrace it and work with it, I think it'll just help you propel even further.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, I was going to kind of lean into that, because this is for the members, and the majority of our members are involved in design and engineering. Some project management, estimation, planning. I mean, you guys have any advice for people just preparing for this whole AI thing coming, like skill sets they should look into or anything?
I can offer up some thoughts on, some of the, I'm kind of reflecting on some of the conversations that we've had internally, and this is some of the advice I've shared at some other conferences this year.
Awesome.
But you've got to have a common level of understanding, amongst your key decision makers internally. I've seen a lot of companies where, executives have a perspective on AI. They know what they've seen in the headlines, right? Or they think, oh, I've used AI, I've used ChatGPT. That's a good introduction to some of the capabilities of AI, but there's so much more, right? And there's so much more that can be done. So I think really understanding the true capabilities of, kind of the art of the possible, like what can you do? And then certainly you can't just look at the opportunities and what could be. There are risks. We have to address some of those risks and be prepared, if we take certain steps into this AI space, what are the ramifications? What do we have to be prepared for down the road? So, with all of those thoughts, we found it best to have, we've got an internal AI governance committee that's, that committee's really set up to, we try to stay on top of, all the latest developments. I think it feels almost impossible to stay on top of the latest, greatest large language models, right? Those are like the browser wars of old, right? It's this one's the best one this week, and another one's the new best one next week. And so we try to stay out of that game and really just focus on kind of the big picture. How do we embrace this technology? How do we ensure that we're taking a responsible approach to AI, and just setting basic guardrails, like, we do not want AI to make decisions for us. It can inform a human and provide some context and detail, but ultimately humans are the decision makers at this company. So that it's for companies that are just getting started on their AI journey, I think really you've got to start there, right? Get everyone up to a certain level of AI literacy, have some conversations, and then start exploring some of those use cases. And you do not have to jump straight into, building some fantastical AI solution. Start reviewing some agreements, or start, ingesting RFPs and looking at those RFPs to see, or can you identify risk in those RFPs, or can you identify other projects that look similar to that RFP, so you can establish some kind of a, benchmark in how you approach similar projects.
I love it. That's a terrific way of getting started. Great advice for the members out there. You dropped a little nugget there that was beautiful. What did you say? The art of the possible or something like
Yeah,
that?
explore the art of the possible. I
That's
mean,
awesome. Is that a book
you've
or did you
uh
make that up?
oh it's probably in a book somewhere, but
You can take credit here. This isn't Joe Rogan. We don't have that many people going to
that's right. That's right. Yeah, that's fine. But we have to, you've got to understand the capabilities of the technology, right? And then start applying that to your business. I will. So this is part of my innovation program that I've defined. There's three, for an innovation program, I've identified three key areas that you need to focus on, and one is education, right? And that's just being aware of what new capabilities exist. What can this technology do for you? The next area is inspiration. So, once you understand what the technology can do, That often I look to other industries for inspiration to see how are they deploying the technology in their unique use cases, or maybe it's a new disruptive business model, and how might we take that and have that inspire our thinking around how we want to shift a business model or create some new service or internal efficiency. And then the third part of that program is just the motivation, right? Like give people some motivation to get out there and act on that knowledge and inspiration and drive forward. And whether that's creating some new service because that's part of their job, or maybe, we're talking about some internal competitions, kind of like the intern AI challenge, but give people a little extra motivation to go out there and act on those new ideas that they've got and try to create some new sources of value.
Excellent. Yeah, that's a great plan. I love it. Good advice for the members too. Very well done. All right. So Michael, you want to add anything at the end here? We'll start getting wrapped up, but I think we're done predicting the future. I think that's great advice to not try.
Yeah, I think for me, I think just making sure everyone comes into this industry with an open mind. Your educational institution, wherever you're going to school, they likely aren't going to teach you a lot of what you need to know about AI. I mean, you're still going to have to learn the job that you're about to do as soon as you come into the industry itself. And so before people dive in and try to automate everything, they really need to take a step back and learn about what it is you're doing first, and then where can you automate things after that. I think some people try to run before they're walking with this at times.
I love having education listed as the very first thing. I mean, we talked about it right away when we got on here, right? Someone will, you go through LinkedIn and you're inundated with all these crazy marketing things. And then, we're on the software creation side of the world and customers come and say, "Hey, can you make this? I saw this on AI." And then, well, let's back up for a second. Let's explain what it really can do and can't do. So,
Yeah,
yeah, that's a great start.
I like working like with people like Jeff. Like I don't know a ton about AI. He has way more knowledge than I probably ever will on this topic. But I may have a better understanding on the substation side of it and the design solutions. And so I think it's two individuals working together, one that understands solutions in each of their respective disciplines. I think you're more likely to have a great outcome than if it's just one individual trying to do it all.
You nailed it. You nailed it. Thank you. Because, I'm familiar with how to facilitate innovation or, lead an innovation workshop and kind of this process for cultivating ideas and then moving that through this evolutionary process of from idea to validating that concept and hopefully ultimately prototyping it. But when you bring together people with diverse perspectives and backgrounds and different perspectives on the work that we do, I like I said in the beginning, I am not an engineer. And so when we bring all these team members together and start collaborating on some of these new ideas, that's where the magic happens. That gets really exciting.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, one of the best skills in life is knowing what you don't know. So,
That's right.
yeah. No, that's great. So, Jeff, do you have somebody on your team? So, if there's a, an engineering or a utility company out there listening to this and they want to maybe set up their own kind of innovation group or maybe have some type of innovation workshop or something, is there someone in your group they could reach out to at Burns & McDonnell?
Yeah, absolutely. I've had that request several times this summer, presenting it at various conferences. Yeah, I'm sure we can find a way to attach my information to the podcast here. But yeah, I'm more than happy to field those requests directly, and we'll probably align with our internal folks that might be closer to the business, assuming it's an existing client. If it's a new client, that's fine as well. But I absolutely enjoy getting out, hearing some of those new ideas and use cases and just helping our clients explore this space. We need to get better as an industry of, around sharing this information. I've also mentioned several times this summer that, we need standardization and, on this particular technology. So, I think having just open and transparent conversations around what we can do, like what's real with this technology and how do we deploy it, in a way that's, again, how do we responsibly embrace this technology? How do we, not violate our, standard protocols around handling data and, some of these nuances get pretty elaborate. So there's definitely a lot to digest. And yeah, I think the more we can work together, the better.
Yeah, outstanding. Yeah, we'd love to have you down to our conference in April. I'll send you the details after this. I'm sure Michael's been bugging you already, but we'd love to have you come down and present and talk to some of those utility groups directly. It'd be awesome.
Yeah, I'd totally be up for that opportunity.
Oh, great. Great. Well, hey, we appreciate both of you guys coming on and taking the time to share your knowledge. We got lots of members out there that are probably doing the LinkedIn searches and getting pretty confused about all this stuff. So it's nice to have some guides, and we appreciate your time.
Yeah, I appreciate you having us on today. It was great to chat. I'm always happy to share some information on this topic and look forward to continuing the conversation.
Awesome. Yeah, and we will have Jeff and Michael's contact information in the notes on the episode. So check the podcast and all the links will be there. You can get in touch with these gentlemen and find out some more about the innovation. Thanks a lot, guys.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Power Up Podcast today. If you enjoyed this conversation and you're not yet a member of the SDSIC, join for free at sdsconsortium.com. Be part of the community in all these great conversations. And maybe you'll be the next guest on the Power Up Podcast.